The Lion Contacts of Professor Hernandez, Part 12. From Chapter 28. Life and Death of Planets. Translated from notes made in November 1975. The discussion mentioned in the previous chapter continues, and Professor Hernandez asks another question of the extraterrestrial woman Laia. Do we die the same as on all the other planets?
No, she said flatly. All the inhabited planets live from a star which supplies them with energy. The life depends upon the nearness or farness of the solar rays, travel. I shall explain. The solar energy stimulates the molecules, but there always must exist a vibratory level of conductivity. The majority of the planets near a star in movement suffer from it, but some balance the movements perfectly, avoiding much of the frictions of energy. Of course, they are not worlds like yours, but, nevertheless, with the help of other technologies, including contributions from other civilizations, they come to preserve life on those planets. There are planets whose atmospheres are so delicate that they completely lack density on their surface, which, at simple sight, appears to be swirls of sand dunes. Logically, there could exist no life, as you know it, but I know there is some type of life, different. In ordinary stars they detect from 40 million to 1 billion degrees centigrade, sic. Others like the Sun, which feeds your world, generate 20 million and in their center almost 60 million, sic. The intensity of energy thus would reach any other planet sufficiently near. Another planet, before Mercury, that approached its, the Sun's, surface crystallized and was absorbed by the potent energy of the Sun of your system. We are all made of stellar material. You will encounter the remains of rocks in every part of this universe, which contain amino acids similar to those of your organism. All, starting from the same, chemical, components that you know, oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, silicon, etc., are concentrated, confined, and coordinated by the DNA. Do you imagine? It is beautiful to think that in space the bodies vibrate in the same manner as the atoms of our body. That is life, and its complexity shows us the power of God. Observe the development of your species. Each one of those animals that live on your world have some particularity. Point. And that is programmed in the DNA of each being. Each one reproduces according to its genus ellipsis points point without change, without alterations, until it comes to new knowledge and takes a new step. If God concedes to those civilizations a contribution of knowledge, to beings who can control that without danger for the universe. Returning to the theme of death, I can tell you that at one time the Earth was much closer to the Sun day. Remark. As also Rampa told in his books. It then provoked an exuberant flora and fauna that grew by gigantic steps. When the solar radiation increased, man aged prematurely. Why? It happened that the dead cells were accelerated in the process of putrefaction with the molecular overstimulation, but the live organism worked intensely, which produced a premature senility. On other worlds, where adequate solar energy is available, and where it lives conveniently removed from the nourishing star, the inhabitants reach ages that would surprise you. The process of aging is slow, there, because there is no molecular overstimulation. The moon of your world also causes an excessive expense of energy by the human being. The moon causes an excessive expense of energy. As a body in the process of extinction, it tries to available. In the beginning the Earth had no satellite. It was conditioned to this, for which through the absorption of a little discharged energy, was provoked of great quantities of solar energy to your world. The moon serves as a sponge to compensate for the overcharge, but it also is a powerful marking point for the Earth, which had lost orbital force after the hecatomb that occurred on your world. Quote. From Chapter 29. Danger to Cities. translated from notes made in November 1975. Further continuing the discussion described in chapters 27 and 28, Lia describes a new danger for our great cities, as a result of our crowded populations and our lack of control of the industrial technologies. Nevertheless, the Earth human must take care of himself, because the heat will asphyxiate the great cities who have a large thermic surface for the accumulation of noxious gases. This also is a danger. The condensation of said gases could come in a moment. On other worlds of equal terms of civilization to yours, they remove or they neutralize all kinds of poisonous gases. That's it, Lia. One theme aggregates another, until it seems that you want to wrap me in a halo of wisdom for intensive knowledge, as if the time was about to terminate, before I know it. How difficult it is to understand all that you have invited to meditate upon. That frequently was too much for me. Many times I was left without absorbing the flow of her wisdom teachings. Lia was the teacher and I the smallest of her students. Point. I also felt it hopeless to try to correspond in her discussions. Point. I wanted to show her that I understood all that she said, but I did not want to seem false. She knew to what measure I assimilated all that she said. She could not allow falsehood and I must not fake my position. Chapter 30. Various spacecraft used. In the course of clearing up details for the publisher of this report, Wendell Stevens had written to Zethe inquiring about more details on the Andromedan spacecraft that may have been taken down in the hundreds of pages of shorthand during the discussions with Professor Hernandez. She had confessed to an ignorance of some of the more technical elements of those discussions, and was more interested in the dialogues she better understood. Those were the substance of the first pages on transcribed shorthand notes she sent for examination, and they make up the first 21 chapters of this report. Zitha's description of how she selected the material she sent and her problems in deciding what to deal with next are very illuminating, and are important in understanding how much the real story has been downplayed in its transmission to us for this report. She offers her idea on the possible confusion of our Andromeda constellation only a few hundred light-years distant with the Andromeda galaxy over 800,000 light-years distant, by conservative estimates. After Stevens' inquiry, she had checked with a local astronomer who also agrees that the Andromedan planet Hynextria has to be in the Andromeda constellation in our own galaxy. She logically suggests that some confusion may have come in, due to the professor's possible lack of astronomical knowledge, and an unconscious association of the galaxy with the word Andromeda. She goes on to describe exactly what her awareness of the Pleiadian contacts in Switzerland was, and where her information came from and when, and believes that the professor did not know even this much, thus reducing the potential for feedback from the Swiss case. And then she discovers some transcribed dialogue on another class of Andromedan ship of intermediate size and clear mention of an even bigger mothership. These new revelations coming at this time are of such importance that this letter becomes a document of itself in this highly unusual report, and so we shall translate it here in its entirety for your examination. Perhaps the most astounding revelation of this letter is the overwhelming inflow of information now flooding the professor. He is being picked up more frequently and is being taken to various places to witness things of such import so often, that he gives up setting down the details in his diary. In fact, he gives up even keeping a diary of his activities, and now the information simply flows from his recollections in such torrents that Zethe is no longer able to get it all down, and so her shorthand notes are unable to keep up with the history. She ends up with long monographs on a given subject expounded on by the professor, which then easily jumps to another subject with no transition between them. The professor's almost casual mention of the considerable variety of special-purpose spacecraft used is such a case. He has been in small two-person craft, five-person ships and other small ones. Then he has been taken to intermediate-size craft, that would be considered very large by us, which carry many occupants plus some of the smaller-sized craft. He has also been taken out to a great mothership of immense size, which carries a number of intermediate and many smaller ships inside of it. To stop and describe all of these phenomenal vehicles in detail simply entails too much time and energy, which he did not feel he had to spare, and so he passes over much of this kind of information in his discussions of other things, which he considered the more important, such as the philosophical information and the messages these extraterrestrials had for Earth humanity. A point came where the professor no longer set anything down in writing, and as he remembered something to be added to another thing already described to Zitha, he would call her up and fill in the additional details that might have been overlooked before. Thus the shorthand notes became broken bits of information, disconnected and sometimes scattered, such that their true relationship to the whole was not always clear. Here is Zitha's letter, which partly begins to explain this situation. It is a real tragedy that it was simply impossible to take down all the information that was available through the professor, before he disappeared. From Chapter 31. The Professor's Disappearance. Playing the devil's advocate, Wendell Stevens wrote Zitha Rodriguez in Mexico City and raised all the doubts other advisors had mentioned to him concerning this very mysterious case. There was the disappearance of the principal and probably only witness to the actual contacts. There was the disappearance of most of his hundreds of pages of notes and diary entries. There was the apparent hostility of the professor's wife, who indicated no willingness at all to cooperate or to again produce the professor's papers returned to her by Zitha Rodriguez. There was the unwillingness to allow any interviews with the professor's children who might have been able to contribute something to the investigation. There was the lack of professional colleagues and even personal friends with whom the professor might have shared his confidence, because he himself, after first attempts, had come to fear their reactions to such a story. This did not make for much tangible support for a case like this, and Stevens expressed a desire to renew the investigation with better resources and try to collect some real substantial evidence. He had interested some backers in supporting such an effort to discover more tangible evidence and had given Zitha Rodriguez a list of things to try to set up for reinvestigation when he could bring a team of researchers to Mexico City. Zitha was trying to do this, as best she could, facing great difficulty in trying to reopen the case. Apparently some Mexican government investigators had entered the scene and were trying to frustrate any other effort besides their own. She learned that the professor's wife herself was under suspicion in the disappearance of the professor, and that police detectives had been unable to close the case for lack of a body. The straightforwardness of Zitha's reply and the poignancy of her interview with Raff Rodriguez are so revealing that we have decided to publish that whole letter here, for you to read for yourself. Translation. Mexico, D.F. the 17th of April of 1988. Mr. Wendell C. Stevens. Douglas, Arizona. Dear Mr. Wendell, excuse my tardiness in answering, but motivated by your doubts that you amiably made me understand in your last letter, I decided with all the possible risks to interview Sraf Hernandez. But I had to think of a way to do it. I believe that she must have more information. Point. And I was not mistaken. I looked in truth for the manner of interviewing her in the best way, as to say, without injuring her sensitivities, since she is a person really difficult to deal with. I shall not go into details about, how I did it. To begin with, it was not easy, because Hernandez has passed through a series of very difficult situations. She never conducted herself with me in any courteous manner whatsoever. At first, she argued that she did not want to have any contact with journalists, and let me tell you, Mr. Wendell, that after having listened attentively, I understood perfectly her situation and her attitude. One of the first questions I asked was, "Where is the professor?" She pursed her lips and remained silent for a moment, and then she began to cry and said to me that she did not know. She answered me saying that actually she had investigated his mysterious disappearance, which occurred on 2 February 1984, and that many of the writings that were left by the professor are in the hands of, since that date, some investigators that are studying the case. She believes that in some of the many writings there is information or some fact about the professor. But up to now she has been able to learn absolutely nothing of him. Sra. Hernandez told me that she has carried on investigation in the most discreet manner possible, and that she has no desire to allow publicity of the case. Unfortunately, neither she, nor her children, nor those who have investigated the case believe in the existence of extraterrestrial beings, and I say unfortunately, because in reality, to me, after analyzing the circumstances that surround his disappearance, it makes it much easier for me to believe that he left with his extraterrestrial friends. If the professor had written something in those last days, or even only one day before his disappearance, the investigators could have discovered it, but I have not had access to those writings, and the little that the wife of the professor has in her hands will be made available to me, after she returns from a trip she is going to make to Coahuila. They lived in Coahuila when he disappeared. I asked the Sra, "Why have you told me absolutely nothing about the disappearance of the professor?" and said that she did not want to involve me in the investigations. Moreover, the detectives had told her not to speak to anybody about the affair, as they feared it would thwart the investigations, because they always believed they were dealing with a crime, though they had not found the body. She affirmed that the first time that the professor had been interned in a hospital was in 1982 and that he remained there, because he had a very serious burn on one knee. She said she couldn't remember well whether it was the left side. Though this burn was very strong, to the surprise of the doctors, it healed much more rapidly than normal considering the age of the professor. What really happened was that the treatment was prolonged nevertheless. And that was, when they asked him, how he had burned it, and he, quite simply, said that he had been about to descend from an extraterrestrial ship. This surprised me, Mr. Wendell, because he always wanted to keep his secret at all costs. Why did he say that? Only he knew about it. From there they sent him to the psychiatric clinic for all kinds of analysis to understand his state of mental health and to determine what it was that was making him mention UFOs and extraterrestrial beings. The wife agreed to this, because it could be said that she herself believed that he would be better